Good afternoon, everyone. Today, during this Christmas season, we are celebrating the Feast of the Holy Family. And for those of you who were here at Christmas, or the Masses that I celebrated, I talked a bit about how we can often have a certain idea of what we envision the Nativity to be. A very solemn scene, very detached, with Mary and Joseph sitting there without an expression on their face, adoring the baby, Jesus. And while, of course, they did have pious dispositions in their heart, I'm pretty sure that things were a bit different from our own experience of knowing what it's like to have a child come into this world. It's a time of great joy, great happiness, and rejoicing. And I encourage everyone to sort of envision Christmas in that way. The joy of Christmas coming from the joy that we experience, that we know that comes from having a child born into the world. And so, in the same way, I would like to offer the challenge to re-envision the Holy Family in the same way. The idea that so many of us have of the Holy Family through pious art and different types of manifestations, sculptures, whatnot, is of the Holy Family, and in the house, nobody talks because they're holy. They're always communicating with God. They never look at each other in the eye. And when they do talk, they whisper, because we know that holy people always whisper. They don't talk loud. And that they're praying all the time. Their hands are always like this. And so one person said after Mass today, St. Joseph couldn't have done any work. He couldn't have done a carpentry work. His hands are always together because he's always praying. And it's almost like a monastery. Dark and somber the whole entire time. This is obviously what the Holy Family was like because they were so holy. But the reality is, if we draw from our own experience maybe of our own family or of other families that we know to be truly holy, we're going to realize that true holy families aren't like that at all. True, there are times of prayer and devotion and piety and sometimes difficult, trying times. But from our experience, holy families are different. So what I want to do today is, for my now almost 15 years as a priest, I've met a lot of holy families. Families that I truly believe are living the gospel in a radical way. And I've drawn a set of characteristics, primary characteristics or signs that I believe mark a holy family. And these holy families have these signs or these characteristics. They're not so much things that you have to do in order to become a holy family, but they flow as a result of or the fruit of a life of pursuing holiness and a life following Christ. And so if we can understand what a holy family is from our own experience, it sheds a bit of light on what the Holy Family must have been like, what it was like to be around them or to live with them. So we're going to look at these five characteristics, although I'm sure we could elucidate a number of different ones. We're going to focus on these. Before we begin, I want to give sort of a caveat, a warning. There's only one holy family. Unless Jesus is your brother and Mary is your mother and St. Joseph is your dad, you don't belong to the holy family. And so we're all going to be imperfect. We're all going to make mistakes. There's never going to be that perfect holy family. And so in my going through this list, I'm not trying to judge anybody. I'm not trying to say that your family is terrible and miserable because you're not holy as the people that I'm talking about or the characteristics that I'm giving. Instead, I'm showing these are the signs of the traits and a desire that we may want to imitate that in our families, particularly for the young people here. The college students, many of you are in dating relationships or one day hope to get married. These are the things that, God willing, you will have as fruits of your marriage in Christ together. So here's the first one, and it's what I talked about at Christmas, and it is the most important. A truly holy family, in my experience, manifests genuine joy and cheerfulness. They are happy. They're filled with the joy of the Spirit. We know that, as I said at Christmas and for the writings of the saints, one of the indistinguishable signs of holiness, true holiness, is the person is joyful. They're not dour. They're not sad-faced all the time. Even amidst trials, there is still that deep, abiding sense of joy and peace because it comes from the Spirit. They have hope that no matter what happens, God will help them to persevere. And so, from my experience, and I'm sure from many people's experience, we've been with families, maybe our family or another family. And the get-togethers are always something to look forward to. People laugh, they tell stories, they enjoy each other's company. There is tremendous joy. We look forward to being with these families. It is a time of recreation in the sense that we find ourselves recreated and being in these situations. The joy that comes that lifts up our soul instead of tears it down. So we like to be around families like this because of their joy and happiness. And so if we understand that, if we go to a family and everybody's miserable and complaining and nobody's talking to the table, you're like, I don't want to be around these people. They're not happy. They're not holy. Then why would we think the Holy Family was like that? Why would we think it would be like that at all? Truly they prayed, but you can imagine the joy and the happiness that pervaded the Holy Family. It was a joy to be around them. I'm sure people, the relatives, loved to come over and hang out because there was a time of laughter and pleasure, something that uplifted them in a very holy way. You know, if you look at John chapter 2, the wedding of Cana, why do you think they probably invited Jesus and Mary? Because they were fun to be around. They lifted up the party. They weren't dour, sour-faced people. So the genuine joy and cheerfulness is the most evident sign or manifestation of a holy family. Number two, the presence of what I'm going to call a transformative and regenerating love. Of course, you know, you have to have love in a holy family. Love is more than a feeling or an emotion, but love is choosing and wanting what's good for the other person. A willingness to sacrifice of loving and feeling love, the affirmation of the other person. We're talking about more than just that love that, hey, maybe we share, but a deeper love, a love that when is it experienced, we experience a deep healing, a transformation, a regeneration in the depths of our hearts and our souls. It is a love that I'm sure all of us have experienced before that pierces into the depths of our heart and brings light into darkness. To be loved in such a special and particular way. It has the ability to lift the darkness of our lives. And I have a story that I tell, or I told at the other masses, a friend of mine who lives out of state, and her son was going through college and going through a difficult time, sort of the growing pains, and really become dark and cynical and sort of drifted away from his faith and the happy-go-lucky nature that he once had. Well, he went and traveled with another family, and during the course of that week, his family, a very devout and holy, wonderful, joy-filled family, she said that she began to notice a gradual change. The darkness began to dissipate. The cynicism disappeared. There was a lightness that came there. And she began to see the real son that she knew was always there begin to be manifested because that family loved him for who he was, even in his brokenness and his darkness. And that love washed away and broke away the calcification of his heart so that he could be loving and more genuinely who he was. It was healing. So imagine what it would be like to be around Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. If you were a neighbor, a relative, and had that very difficult day, you were really struggling with your life, to be able to be with them and to be affirmed and to be loved, the darkness would have lifted. Your life would have been transformed. Even in your weakness and in your imperfection, they looked past that and saw who you were and loved you for who you were. The third one is one that maybe is a little controversial, but we're still going to talk about it, is what I would call an evangelical openness. An openness to spreading and proclaiming the gospel. Now, without a doubt, mothers and fathers in their homes want to create a safe place for their families, where they can be safe, where their faith can grow, where they can be formed, a sort of a haven for development and formation. But what I'm beginning to see more and more in Catholic families that are striving for holiness, striving to be Catholic, what they're doing is, in order to create that safe place, they're building up impenetrable walls. They're building up a fortress where they never go out and nothing comes in. The desire to create this Catholic environment, there has to be everything Catholic. Only Catholic music, only Catholic movies, only Catholic television, only everything. They dress in the way that they think is going to be the most modest. And what happens is they wall themselves off in this reactionary approach to the world, which is not legitimate, which is not opening up, thinking that they are being very Catholic, when in reality, they're pretty much just being weird. And I'm not trying to judge, I'm not trying to condemn, but the fact of the matter is, it doesn't attract anyone. In fact, it repels them. We're not living in the 1940s or what you thought the 1940s were. We're living in the 21st century. And yes, there are threats to the Catholic faith. Yes, there are difficulties. But we are called to have an evangelical openness, to not wall ourselves off and wait till the whole culture is destroyed. We're called to be formed well enough that we can go outside of the walls, outside of the safe haven, and bring the gospel to others, to be able to transform the culture, as Jesus said, to be leaven in our society. That's what it's going to be, holy families doing, bringing that gospel and that evangelical openness, still being able to discern what's good and what is not good. And so applying that to the Holy Family, they did not live in a monastery. They did not live in a fortress. The doors were open and they were out involved in the community. I would also say that people wanted to be around them, and being around them drew them closer to knowing God. Again, tying back to the whole purpose of Mary and Jesus being at the wedding of Cana. They were out there transforming lives, proclaiming the gospel, letting people encounter the person of Jesus, or even Jesus when he was a young boy, going out in the temple to spread the gospel, to talk to people who are not walled up in their house. This is an attitude of fear, not of evangelical openness and courage. Fourth, this is also another very important one, the practice of our Catholic faith has got to be, or is, a characteristic of these families, something which is life-giving and animating to the entire life. Instead, so often we see Catholics who see their faith as an obligation. If Catholic faith is something you do on Sunday for an hour, you check it off, and I'm going to go live the rest of my life. I might pray grace before I go to bed. And what happens is the faith then becomes something very exterior, a set of obligation and rules. And when it's imposed, particularly on kids as they get older, they will begin to kick, they will begin to rebel. And if they don't, all their faith is going through the motions. So when they go to college, because it hasn't become something that they've owned and taken possession of, it tends to fall away. Instead, the faith has to be something that rises naturally, something which is freely chosen and animates the entire existence, instead of something we just do on Sundays. And so, this is something we can all of a sudden say, I'm going to start doing. It has to come as a fruit of living the faith, where Mass is no longer seen as an obligation, but it's something which we want to do. We want to gather to worship as a family, even looking for opportunities to go during the week. Living out the feasts of the church, really celebrating the Marian feast days. Instead of forgetting to go to Mass on the January 1st, we look forward to it. You know, I saw some people, and I think some of you may be here, I was really impressed on Facebook. So on their New Year's Day party, it's the New Year's Day, on New Year's Eve, they're going to celebrate the New Eve Mary, who we celebrate on the first day of the year, and having a big party. That's what we're talking about. People who allow their faith to animate their entire existence, and they get joy from it. And the prayer and the rhythm of prayer, praying as a family, the rosary together, things that are not seen as a burden, but the point is the Spirit's moving so much, the family wants to pray together. And so the same way with the Holy Family. Now, granted, Jesus was God, they were a little different, and I don't think it was time to go to the synagogue. Jesus was complaining and didn't want to get out of bed. He wanted to be able to go and worship. He looked forward to it, to be able to go and be in the Father's house. Now, connected to this, there is another point that could be extended into a whole other complete homily. There is something that I've found that is an absolute necessity for this true, genuine living of the faith to happen. In fact, I would say it's an absolute necessity for any of the holiness we talk about. If you don't have this, it is going to be nearly impossible to achieve these fruits. And that is the active participation of the man, of the Father, as the spiritual leader of the family. He's going to do it in different ways, but if the dad is not leading, you can forget it. It is going to be very, very difficult for the family to grow in genuine holiness, for the faith to become authentic. And we can see it in Scripture. Now, I love this passage. We see today they're bringing Jesus to the temple. When the days were completed for their purification, according to the law of Moses, the parents of Jesus, Joseph and Mary, brought him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. Notice what it does not say. It does not say, when the time came to present Jesus to the Lord, Mary brought Jesus while Joseph sat on his couch drinking Manischewitz and watching NFL football. It doesn't say that at all. The dad was involved. And in fact, if you see the other passages, Joseph is the one always taking the lead. You got a problem with fathers who don't like to take the lead. Of course, the ones that I should chew out are not here. But I'm sure you can go back and tell them that. I've said before, too. I once had a man come up to me and says, Father, you know, religion, I don't like it. It's for women. I said, tell me that to my face again, please. He backed off. And I said, I should kick your behind for that. I mean, what are you saying? No, men need to be involved in the faith along with women for families to be able to grow in holiness. And then fifth and finally, a true sign of a holy family, a true family that's manifesting this fruit, they're going to be good and generous stewards with what God has given to them. And we see this in poor families who don't have a lot and in rich families who have a lot. They realize that everything they have is given by God. So there's not this materialism, this desire to hoard and to keep. They're generous, whether it be to the church, to the poor, or to their neighbors. And I think one of the great signs of this, and we've experienced it, families that you know, you could go to, maybe it's your family, there's always a willingness to share the food. There's never like, oh, we don't have enough for you. There's always more gumbo. There's always more cake. There's always this willingness to share what God has given to them, as poor as they may be, or as meager of an amount of food as they have. And so in the same way, we can see that, I think, in the Holy Family. There were always matzo balls to go around. Mary was always willing to share. There was a generosity. Even though they were poor, they didn't have a lot, they were willing to give to those in need. That generous stewardship of what God had been given to them. It was a pleasure to be around them because nothing was just for themselves. They were always generous in giving to the poor, giving to neighbors, and giving to the church. So these are five characteristics. I'm sure I could go with a bunch of others. And you can think of your own. Signs of genuinely holy families. But why are these so powerful? Why do I choose these five in particular? Because, particularly these five, the thing that is important is that they are all attractive characteristics. True holiness doesn't repel. True holiness doesn't revert into some monastery or fortress where no one can see it. True holiness for a family. We're not talking about monks. We're not talking about cloistered nuns. That's a different type of holiness. We're talking about a holiness that attracts others to Jesus. These things, the love, the joy, the life-giving faith, attract others and say, I want what that person has. I want to be a part of that. I want my family to be like that. It's nothing we can actually do ourselves. We've got to open ourselves to it, strive for holiness, and allow the Spirit to begin to transform us. But if we as families are going to imitate the Holy Family and to better understand what the Holy Family is like, then these are going to be manifestations that are going to shine out towards others so that we can be that leaven in society of the joy of the gospel and draw others to a deeper knowledge and experience of Christ. Amen.